Okay, so I want to do a quick introduction, and sorry if this is kind of loud. Move it down a little bit. So I am Jeanette Perugnam. I have worked on the international recruiting team for Microsoft for about 2 years. I'm based out of Redmond, but I live in Seattle, Washington in the United States, which is where Microsoft headquarters is. And this is my colleague, Mike Buhlman. He's also worked for Microsoft for about 2 years. He lives in Seattle, Washington. And that's us. And we'll be presenting. I'm going to kind of handle the presentation today, but feel free to ask any questions throughout the presentation if something doesn't make sense. This is a lot of meaty content when we're talking about surviving your technical intern or your technical interview, excuse me. And so feel free to stop me at any time because I want you guys to walk out of here feeling very confident that you can go into a technical interview and ace it. Okay. So our agenda today, we are going to talk about what technical companies look for, the interview basics, preparation and research, an example interview format, and then we're going to move into a little bit more of the technical details, so different interview questions that might be asked, tips and tricks on how to get the job, and then open it up again at the end for questions, but just ask me along the way. Now, I do want to preface this entire presentation with the notion that I am a recruiter, so I fall under the HR kind of pyramid. I don't have a technical background myself, and I like to do this during... Oh, that's my husband, apparently. He wants to get a hold of me. kind of embarrassing. But now you guys all know him, too. Okay, so I want to preface it that I don't have a technical background, so if you're going to ask me some very detailed technical questions, I probably won't be able to answer them for you today. But I do, my role on the university team is I select, so I start from the CV stage, I go out to campuses, I talk with students, I collect their resumes, I review their resumes, I bring them in for a first round screen, and then I ultimately make the final call whether or not they go to a final round of interviews. And so that's kind of my role within the team, and then other people obviously play various parts, but I can offer that perspective, and I think that that can be pretty valuable, even if I can't go in and deep dive into the actual technical portions of the presentation. Oh, cool! I like having fun surprises in my presentations that aren't normal. Okay, so what do we look for at Microsoft? So the self-confidence one is in purple. It's a little hard to see. But these are some core competencies, what we call them at Microsoft. And other big tech companies and companies in general, I would say, look for these as well. They're pretty broad, but we'll start with the purple. We'll start with the purple one right here. That's self-confidence. So in any job, whenever you're going to apply for a job, you need to be confident. So I don't know if you guys have ever heard of TED Talks. Raise your hand if you have. No? Yeah, a couple of you. Great. So there's this one talk on TED Talks where this lady gets up and she's a psychiatrist and she talks about how a lot of people's body movement and what they do with their body can either be seen as being confident or not. And then what you can do, you can kind of pump yourself up to be confident or not. So if I'm standing like this in an interview, getting ready for an interview, my body is basically telling my mind that you're not going to be confident, you're not going to answer the questions well because I'm kind of sheltered, I'm keeping in with myself. So kind of one trick to being self-confident and kind of boost yourself is before an interview, it's kind of silly, but I do this sometimes when I do presentations like this, I'm like in the back like, yeah, but being big is a really like key thing for being confident in interviews, and it sounds weird, but like building that confidence before you go into an interview is really awesome because the interviewers will immediately notice it if you're kind of sheltering and you're not talking very clearly and you seem like you don't have the knowledge or the foundation to get the job. We want to hire confident people. The next portion, ability to learn and adapt. So during the interviews, the ability to learn and adapt, both shown through like your previous projects that you've done at school or in other areas like while you're actually in the interview is huge. Because at Microsoft specifically, and I'm going to talk in terms of Microsoft, but this can again be applied to other companies, is that we don't want to hire people when we feel like they're not going to grow and they're not going to learn because we're continuously innovating products and we need people to be on board that are going to be in the same page and they're going to be able to learn and adapt because you're going to be thrown problems at big companies and small companies if you're starting up your own company that you have no idea what the solution is going to be. And so you need to be able to learn and build that knowledge throughout. Honesty and integrity. This one seems like it should be an obvious one, but I need to call it out because a lot of people will list, and this is specifically referring on your resume. So people will list things on their resume, like they're experts in C++. And then they'll get to an interview, and the interviewer will talk to them and be like, oh, okay, I see you're an expert in C++. Let's dive deeper. And you're being interviewed a lot of the times, like when the really technical interviewers come in, by principal developers or people that are very high up in the company that are coming in to interview you. So when you claim that you're an expert and you have 1 year experience, that looks pretty bad because I guarantee in 1 year you're not going to be an expert in most things. If you were, then you'd be a genius and you probably would already have a job. I'm not trying to say that in a bad way, but I mean, if you can learn that quickly and be an expert at something, that's phenomenal. Not very many people can do that. So just be honest when you're talking about your resume and be, you know, don't overinflate things because that's really important. Creativity and passion. So we look for people that are going to bring something different to the table. You know, we don't want groupthink. We don't want everybody to have the same ideas. We don't want everybody to have the same passion. We want people to be very, like, specialized and come up with really unique thoughts because that's how innovation kind of stirs and that's how new development happens. Clear and organized thought process. This one can be very difficult when you're getting thrown questions on the spot. Right, you're in an interview, you're kind of standing up. There's typically, for Microsoft, there'll be a whiteboard that you're using for your interview, and your interviewer will be sitting like right here in the front row, basically. And you're up here like trying to write your code or being asked questions, and you almost feel like, you know, the spotlight's only on you. So being able to take a step back and have clear and organized thoughts is so, so important. It helps the interviewer follow you along your thought process. And it helps make sure that the answers that you're trying to get out are going to be exactly what is the right answer. Solid communication skills. Okay, so this can kind of be taken a couple of different ways, but basically, the long and the short of it is that if you're able to get up in front of someone and clearly, this kind of relates back to the clear and organized thought process, clearly communicate what the solution is going to be, that's great. And that will help in the long run, so that shows that you can work with other team members. Now, companies like Microsoft, I don't want to scare you guys to think that, you know, you have to, if you're applying for a company in the US or other areas, and let's say you don't necessarily know the language very well, but you have, you know, general understanding, so let's say English. One thing that I do want to note is that Microsoft is a great company and has a lot of benefits. So even though maybe you can get your point across, but you don't feel like your English is as strong as you would like it to be, you know, again, the self-confidence plays a huge part. Don't go in there and be like, my English is so bad, I'm so sorry, hopefully this will, you know, this will turn out well. Don't even put yourself in that situation. Just go in there confident and be like, I know I can get my point across as best as I can, whether it's through writing code on the board or trying to talk it through with the interviewer. That's really, really important. And Microsoft actually provides different language classes as a resource to you if you get a full-time offer. So don't make that be the reason why you don't apply for a company like Microsoft, or you do. Well, or you can. But, you know, don't be deterred from that. And then finally, raw talents and smarts. This one's a little bit harder to specifically define because my version of what smart is very different from your version of what smart is. Everybody has a very different opinion of what's smart. I could say that street smarts is the most important, where you could say book smarts is more important. So here, this is just showing how quickly do you learn. You know, are you able to take concepts that you learned maybe back in your first year of university? Are you able to take those concepts and apply them 6 years down the road to a very new problem, but they have kind of the same foundation? So that's kind of that ability to learn in that raw smarts, is can you connect points quickly and seamlessly? Okay, so this is really hard to see, and if you were in Mike's presentation just right before, this kind of goes through it, and his was a little prettier than mine, so I'm not going to bore you down with all the details, but this is really quickly an interview timeline, and I'm not going to go through the exact interview steps, but basically you want to submit your CV online. If your CV gets selected, then you're going to move into this first round of screens, which is right here, and your first round of screen is going to be a 30-minute screen. It could be either on the phone or in person. These can be either a behavioral type of a screen with an HR representative or a technical with somebody from the business. After that, if let's say you kind of move down and you pass your screen, you get selected to go to the final round of interviews typically. And these interviews are going to be 3 to 4 1-hour long interviews all back to back. This is very, very standard for most big tech companies. You will not just have one interview. For some cases, you could have up to 6-7 interviews to get one job that probably hundreds of other people are trying to apply for as well. So that's kind of the general process and what we look for, and then your offer is given. So again, and if you've seen our presentations throughout the day, we really, really, really want to emphasize the importance of your CV and resume. So for a lot of you guys, this is going to be that have been through the presentations today. This will be repetitive, but you have an advantage because now hopefully it's set deep in your brain to where you can just like basically give this part of the presentation. So some key sections. You want to include at the very top of your resume, you want to include your contact information, your academic history, your job experience, and other activities and leadership. So that's kind of the format of how your resume should flow. So there's a lot of other kind of fluffy information that you can provide in your resume, but what your resume is really trying to do is highlight your experiences and why you should get the job over somebody else. Now, you have one sheet of paper typically to do this. So as a recruiter, I'm going through thousands and thousands of resumes every single year, which is true. And this is really difficult. I'm not going to spend 5-10 minutes on each resume. My job would literally be to review resumes, and that's it if I were to do that. And so I have about 1 minute to look at your resume and determine whether or not you're going to go into this yes pile or this no pile. Now, it sounds kind of harsh, but this is the reality that we're living in. We have a lot of people that are applying for jobs, and we have very, you know, a limited number. And so when you're dealing with that, you have to really determine and almost be cutthroat about who's moving on to what stage. So to kind of help you get there maybe a little faster, these are the key things that you should always, always, always have on your resume. And I would prefer them when I look at my resumes from my region. I like to have them generally in this order because one of the first things I always look at is your academic history. So what I'm looking for there is I'm looking at what school you went to, whether or not you graduated, because that's going to help determine if you're going to be an intern, a full-time graduate, or maybe not even in my realm of recruiting, right? So if you graduated, let's say, back in 2006, you actually don't fall under my specific recruiting, which is university recruiting. You would fall into the industry category. So you would actually go to a completely separate department in Microsoft, which is good to know. But I like to have things kind of organized in here, or in this general template. So academic history. Okay. So required. Again, your university, what's your degree? Another big one is what's your major? So what are you studying? Computer science, finance, that's important. And then your graduation date. Some optional areas, list specific relevant classes you've completed, list thesis or dissertation. So if you are in your master's or in your PhD, or if you just have other research that you've already done in your undergraduate work, I think that's pretty important to note. So if you have any publications, if you're an undergraduate and you have publications, that's pretty impressive. So I would definitely highlight that. You know, if you're working on something very specific and you're in your PhD, highlight it because you've spent a lot of time and effort researching and you're really passionate about that topic. So definitely build those out, but don't make them the main meaty part of your your resume. All right. So additional, in the work experience and skills, so I'm just going to kind of put all these up there so you can, oh, whoops. So you can look through them. So we want to see your work experience. So if you have any internships or full-time positions or just work experience at other big tech companies or something that's relative or can relate to the field that you're applying to or the position you're applying to, sure, go ahead and list them out because that's great. That shows that you have some real-world knowledge and experience. Some other project experiences, if you're in school and let's say you don't have as much work experience because you've been focusing on school, that's okay too. But list out those projects that kind of set you apart. Now, I could go in and look at a country or a certain university, and if you kind of take a step back and you put yourself in my shoes as a recruiter, and I'm looking at your resume and you list a class project that everybody had to complete, and you list that down, and then everybody else in your university or in your class listed that as well, that's not going to set you apart. So list out, and you know, and it's fine, it may be a really big project, but it's not something that's different. It doesn't show your passion and your will to kind of go outside these, you know, university box lines and show that, like, hey, I have an extra passion for technology. And the reason I'm showing that is because I went and I did this project and everybody did this project, but what I did that was different is I took it a step further and I was so passionate about it that I went out and I submitted it for the Imagine Cup because I thought it was brilliant and I wanted to add these extra algorithms or, you know, do those types of things. But that shows that you're setting yourself apart. Academic club and organization involvement. I think that these are important, but I wouldn't go, unless you have a very, very specific role on those academic clubs, I think it's fine to list them, but don't go into any details. So if you're a part of the IEEE club, that's great. But if you actually participated in IEEE competitions or ACM competitions, that's even better. If you placed, that's even better. So you kind of start building your resume based on, like, hey, if I was just a member, I'm just going to write a really quick blurb, like, IEEE member. Great. Check. Now, if you got first place in a competition, I'm going to do IEEE member or IEEE competition first place. So then you're kind of even further, again, separating yourself from the pack. And then programming language, I would just do very brief. And again, that expert, intermediate, those types of languages around the programming languages that you're going to write on your CV, be very, very careful and be very honest about those. I would almost prefer seeing that you have experience or that you've worked with a programming language than you coming out and telling me that you're an expert. Hopefully, I can determine that based on research and other projects and things like that that you've shown in your CV, but I would be very careful. All right, and here are some just additional optional for your CV. I'm an over-clicker. Here are some optional things that you can put in. Community involvement, non-academic groups, athletics, achievements. Those are good, but again, if you have that 30 seconds, only put things that are going to be relevant to the job that you're applying for, and then hopefully you can kind of talk about it later with your interviewer, some additional things. Oh my gosh. Sorry, guys. Ah! Okay. The time change. Okay. So other tips, include data points that distinguish you from your peers. You got that. Again, about one page, be honest and proofread. Okay, so let's now start to talk about preparation and research. So this is now where we're getting into the actual interviews, right? So you've submitted your CV, your resume is selected to move on to your first round screen. Awesome. So, you know, you want to make sure you could submit your CV, and let's say I haven't gotten back to you and it's 6 months down the line, but hey, your CV now, I want you to interview because we have a position that opened up. Great. So make sure that CV that you submitted 6 months ago is actually accurate. So a lot can change in 6 months. You could be working on a new project. You could have worked on a project that you listed that was really cool, but then you could have completely changed and done something else with it. And so make sure that's up to date. Get ready to talk about yourself. So don't be nervous about listing out some key achievements that you've been working on, that you've been doing. If that means that you got first place in every single competition that you ever entered into, don't be afraid to list that. That's great. And don't be afraid to talk about it, because that shows that you're okay with your achievements and your accomplishments, and you're proud of that. And interviewers like to see that you're proud of the work that you've done. So you're going to also have to be prepared to discuss in a lot of detail your projects that you've worked on. So kind of relating back to your CV, if you list that you worked on a project, but really you've only, like, maybe done a small portion, like you contributed 10 lines of code and the project was 5,000 lines, and you're just like, oh, I was on that project, I did such a good job, it was so hard, but you had a very, very minimal participation in it. My own personal experience is I probably wouldn't list that, because if it gets to a technical interviewer and they see that on your resume, they're going to expect that you know that project like the back of your hand, right? They're going to expect to, like, lift it up and you can say from start to finish exactly what you did the entire time. Now, that may seem a little odd to you guys, but if you list it on your resume, that's, like, fact. Interviewers will take that and say, like, you should know this no matter what. And so be very, very careful with that. And then if you are, before you get into the interviews, make sure that you prepare and look at your resume and make sure you know your projects that you listed, right? And then, Yeah. Another one, again, about the communication, practice in English. So if you're applying to a United States-based company or a lot of companies internationally, they're probably going to be doing your interviews in English. So just kind of prepare and practice. Now, it doesn't have to be perfect. Again, it doesn't have to be perfect. You don't expect perfection. But make sure you practice and you don't go in kind of raw and just like, yeah, I can do this, and then get all jumbled because you didn't practice. So make sure you do that. Okay. So company-specific knowledge. Know what company you're interviewing with. Again, sounds kind of obvious, right? But it happens all the time where a company or like a candidate will come in wearing, now this is a little, you know, getting very specific, and as a recruiter, I can say that this is one of my pet peeves, is when I see candidates come in to interview for Microsoft and they're wearing a Google shirt. It seems obvious, right? Like, maybe you shouldn't do that. Maybe it doesn't seem obvious, but don't do that. If you're applying for a company or you're interviewing for a company, go all in, right? Hopefully, you're interviewing for that company because you want to work for them, not to just get the experience. I mean, I can understand, I guess, both, but I hope that you're interviewing and you get to a final round stage because you actually want to be there. Now, if I'm showing up to, let's say, a basketball game, right, and I'm wearing the opposing or not even a team that's playing's jersey, I mean, what does that look like for me as a fan? It makes me look like I'm disengaged. It makes me look like I could care less who's playing, right? And the same goes for your interview. So make sure that you're kind of all in. Learn about the position and company. So most recruiters or most job postings will be able to prepare you for that. So kind of cross-check. What I like to do is pull up the job posting, and I kind of look at my resume next to it, and I say, like, oh, yeah, this relates to this project that I've done. Oh, great, you're looking for this experience? Well, this relates to this leadership experience that I have. And so being able to compare those actually really helps you in preparing, because you may get asked a question, and then you can automatically be like, oh, yeah, that was on the job posting. Like, I know that they really are interested in that, so I'm going to go and start talking about how it relates. Visit the company websites, talk to your friends, maybe talk to former employees or interns from that company, visit employee blogs, and you know, your career centers at some of your universities will actually have partnerships with Microsoft recruiters and with Microsoft in general, so feel free to go in and talk to them, see if you can get any additional information. And then ultimately, you can always defer back to your recruiter. So if you go online to most companies, you can hopefully find your recruiter. I know at Microsoft, you can go to microsoft.com/universities, which is our university site. And we have a list of every single one of our recruiters and the regions that they cover, the countries, or the schools that they cover. And so you can always go on there and find, you can email from that. So you can get basically our entire contact, except for our bank accounts. But you can get our contact information to reach out to us. Okay, so this basically just goes a little bit more in depth, but your career centers, other options, look at books, puzzles. I'm going to skip over that part. Okay, so here are some interview basics. So let's start with logistics. When you get into your interviews and you get past a certain round, this is really big because you don't want to go into an interview unprepared. So this is kind of the very basics, mind, body, dress, logistics. So we'll start with dress because that's the simplest one. So company culture. So at Microsoft, we typically wear jeans and a t-shirt. It's awesome. Some people, now if you're in a finance role or other roles outside of development specifically, you may get a little more dressed up. And so make sure you're aware. But you know, you can go into any of our interviews wearing jeans and a t-shirt and be completely fine. Now, if you're applying for, let's say, a Fortune 500 banking company, yeah, you probably aren't going to be able to wear jeans and a t-shirt. So just kind of know the company culture. The weather, that's a really small one, but make sure you're dressed appropriately. If it's minus 20 degrees Fahrenheit outside, don't come in shorts. You may be uncomfortable. And then dress for comfort. So if you're comfortable in a suit, wear a suit. If you're comfortable in jeans and t-shirt, wear jeans and t-shirt. If it's appropriate. Logistics. Make sure you know the date, the time, the place, your flights, your hotel, and then have your recruiter contact. Most companies, especially big companies, will provide a list before you actually come to interview of all of this information. But have it on hand as well in case there's problems along the way, because the last thing you want to do while you're applying and you're in this interview stage is to be stressed out about, oh, am I going to miss my flight? Or where's my hotel? Or, you know, how am I going to get from point A to point B? Make sure you have that all figured out before the interview so you're not stressing out. And then finally, mind and body. Sleep, eat, and then scheduling. Make sure you're scheduling everything appropriately so you're not running late to your interviews. That's really important.
I'm going to jump in real quick. When it comes to sleep, if you're going to be interviewing at a time zone that's very different from the one that's back home, I would recommend starting to adjust to that time zone in advance. So let's say you live in Europe and you're interviewing in the United States. Don't rely on that 24-hour period when you're traveling to do a full adjustment from Europe time to U.S. time. You're going to be really tired. I'm guessing people who traveled here from a different, very different time zone were tired for a couple days. I know I was. So start to adjust early if you possibly can.
Yeah, that's a great point. Speaking of, does anybody have any questions right now? Yeah. Great question. So if you're applying to a U.S.-based company where their headquarters is in the U.S., you typically want to go for one page. Now, if you're in your PhD and you have some additional research and things like that, you can kind of expand and do a little bit more because you may have some meatier content that you need to further explain. But about one page is very, very normal. 1 to 2, I would say, internationally is probably appropriate, though. Yeah. Yeah. Sure. No, I mean, it's no problem. You definitely can. I mean, your resume is yours, right? So if you want to kind of spruce it up, make it a little different, that's great. But again, I think of it sometimes if you use graphics, you're taking away space maybe for some of the content that's going to help me actually determine whether or not you're going to come in to the company. So same with pictures. I think pictures are great, but you know, if you have media content and that's going to put you maybe at 3 pages, I probably would leave it out.
And I would think about the job is that you're applying for. If you're applying for a job in advertising or something like that, obviously they want to see your creativity. If it's like an engineering type of job, they're going to really want to know about the content. So think about what the kind of job is and what they might be looking for.
Yeah. Cool. Okay, so let's go into the interview format. Warm-up. So when we're sitting down for an interview and we're kind of talking about this is your initial, let's say, screen, or it could be in your final interviews, we're going to sit down and you're most likely going to start with a brief little warm-up. Typically, interviewers will not sit down and all of a sudden be like, okay, code this, bam. They want to make sure you're comfortable and that you feel comfortable because they want to get the optimal performance out of you during that small time that they have to evaluate you as they can. So they'll start with introductions, the interview's position on the team, area of ownership, so they'll kind of give a little bit of, again, the fluffy stuff, but I think it's really important to get you comfortable. And then they'll kind of move into position identification. So they'll talk about what you want to do for the company. They're trying to assess where your passions are, right? And they're trying to kind of pick up on cues. So if you love game design, go ahead and mention that. Now, if you're interviewing, let's say, for Microsoft and you're actually interviewing for Azure, let's say, or like within a broader organization, STB, Server Tools and Business, they don't do game design in there. So that kind of might not be a fit, but still let them know kind of your passions and why you have a passion around this area. And then specifically why you have a passion for the team, Microsoft, and your interests. So review, past experiences from resume. So I can guarantee you during every single interview you will have one question, whether it's a big or a small question, about some area on your resume. So again, that honesty and integrity is really important. They can go as in-depth as they want, where they can talk about during the entire interview, they can talk about one project that you did. And they could just continuously ask you question after question after question, trying to dig as deep as they possibly can into your knowledge on that specific topic. That happens all the time. Or they could just really quickly be like, okay, describe it to me. Great, let's move on. So if they choose to move on, they can talk about more detailed questions like coding problems and scenario-based problem-solving questions. We're going to go into those a little bit more about some examples later. And then at the end, they'll wrap up and give you the opportunity to ask questions. This is something that a lot of people, sometimes candidates will be like, oh, I don't have any questions for you. That's okay if you don't, but I would try to kind of prepare some questions beforehand that you have either about the business, the company, the work that you're going to be doing, because it shows that you've done your research before the interview, and that's pretty impressive that you've come in and you've already pre-thought out these questions to have that dialogue with the interviewers, and I know every single interviewer likes to have those questions. Okay. Whoa. Now the technical stuff. Okay, so what is a technical interview? Technical interviews gauge what you know, they evaluate how you think, and they assess how you solve problems. Those are probably, in a very general way to explain technical interviews, those are the key points. So types of questions to expect. You will be asked some behavioral questions. So if I were to say, which some of you did some of the mock interviews with us over the past week, one of the questions that you'll typically hear from a company like Microsoft is describe a tough technical project or problem that you've experienced in the past or that you've solved in the past. So that's considered a behavioral question because I'm not asking you to sit up there and actually write out code or actually solve a solution on a whiteboard. I'm telling you to describe situations or scenarios. Another one that you might hear is something about teamwork. So describe a time when you had a conflict with a team member, something like that. And what you're trying to get out here is how are you working with others or how in-depth is your knowledge on the project? Another one, another type of question, again, resume-based, and then the technical. So here are some key, if hopefully everyone can see this, but the technical questions that are going to be asked are going to be mainly around programming, algorithms, system design, product, and industry ideas. So you could be asked a question, it's not necessarily a behavioral question, but you could be asked, like, what was the last blog you read? Okay, and then you answer the question, and they're like, okay, so tell me about a technology that you read about on that blog, and why was it so interesting? So again, the honesty and integrity. If you actually didn't read that blog or you have no idea, like you shouldn't probably say something like that. But you will be asked questions at most tech companies. You can be, not will, but you can be asked questions about how in-depth your knowledge is about the current technology market. What were the old questions like? So we like to include this because I think candidates nowadays, they sometimes think that interviewers will come in and try to trick them. That's pretty harsh, and I hope people aren't doing that. I know they used to, but not as much anymore. So if you go and you research online, some of the questions that you might see are, how would you move Mount Fuji? Okay. Well, I can read books about that, and there's actually solutions in books. Nowadays, companies actually don't like to ask as many questions that have a one-solution answer. They like to ask questions that get you thinking, that have multiple solutions, and they want to see how you got from point A to point B, because that's more important than just saying, like, hey, I can memorize an answer. That's great. I think we all could do that if we spent some time learning. So, again, such questions have limited use in real-world application. I don't know very many people that are actually going to go and try to move Mount Fuji. If you are, congratulations. So let's talk a little bit about what the new questions are like. So for coding, everyone is expected, if you're applying for a software developer position, everyone is expected to know how to code. And this is included in program managers. So we like to include the program managers because I know some of you guys are more interested in that type of a role, which is great. But PMs need to know how to code. Maybe not to the extent that a software developer engineer or software developer engineer in test do, but they still need to know because they have to communicate with developers and testers all the time. So usually you'll be asked a basic algorithmic type question. Now again, I don't have a developer background, I don't have a technical background, so I can't provide as many examples, I'm so sorry. I think we have a couple on the next slide which you can take a look at. But basically, what I've heard interviews, so I'm always in the debrief room, so after a final interview, we'll have a bunch of candidates that are coming in and interviewing with different people, and at that point, I'm sitting in the room listening to all the interviewers come in and give their feedback about every single interview that they do. So what I have the unique ability to do is kind of take a step back and listen to what the general trends with candidates are. So why candidates get hired, why they don't get hired, what are some key characteristics that work, what are some that don't. And so I think this one, the basic algorithmic type questions, is really important because I hear this all the time from interviewers, is that they'll be talking to a candidate and candidates try to overthink a problem. All the time this happens. So they'll try to get up and they're just like, oh, I just want to show how I can code. And they'll literally take a full whiteboard to write up all of the code that they want to when really it should be four lines. Now, this shows to the interviewer a couple of things. It can show that either maybe you didn't understand the problem, maybe you're trying to show that you know how to write code, but it's not going to be optimal. And then ultimately it shows that you can't come to the best solution. So make sure you kind of start in any technical interviewer, start at the basics. So start with maybe your basic kind of back to computer science 101 or your basic, you know, data structures and algorithms class, you know, start with the very basics and then start building on those questions. All right, so language is generally not important, but be able to code well in the language that you indicate as proficient on your resume. So again, if you list that you're an expert in C++, the interviewers will expect that you write everything in C++. If you list that you're proficient in Java, but you also like C#, they'll probably give you the option to choose which language you want to write in. At this point, I would probably write in the language that you know the best, not the one that you think the interviewer is going to want you to write in. So if you're coming to Microsoft, a lot of people think, oh, I have to write in a C language because, you know, I'm using Visual Studios and I need to write in these languages. Okay, that's great. But if you're really good at Java, use Java because that's going to show that you actually know how to solve the problems more so than trying to attempt to use a language that you're not as proficient in. And that's okay because we can teach you. If you show that you can learn, again, that learning curve is really important. If you can show that you can learn, we can teach you how to write in any language that's out there. Logic correctness is more important than language syntax or grammar. I think that one explains itself, but and then reasons for coding questions. So we want to see and we want you to demonstrate your coding skills and we want you to learn how to interact with people and then your verification skills. So if you're coding something, make sure you always go back and test it. If you don't even like testing, that's okay, but you need to know how to test because I guarantee your code, maybe not for that one particular problem, but I guarantee somewhere along the line somebody's going to be testing or you're going to be testing other people's code or projects and have to determine what's going to be right, what's going to be wrong, how are things going to be more efficient. And so everybody that comes in needs to know how to do these skills. Okay, so here are some examples of the algorithm type questions. So it's kind of hard to see. All right. So how would you sort, search, represent, or solve? So a question could start off like that. Or how would you do this with the efficiency of the data structure algorithm? So talking about efficiency, optimization, you know, how would you sort something, dealing with big data? By the way, if you list on your resume, big data is one of those buzzwords I think we're hearing a lot nowadays, which is great. But if you list on your resume that you're, let's say, an expert in big data, or you've done 5 projects in big data, I guarantee, again, your interviewer will nail down on big data and only ask you questions on big data. And if you really don't know very much, that can actually, in my mind, if that was me and I'm being just like constantly asked questions about something I'm not as good at, that kind of would put me off for the rest of the interviews, and that can be a bad experience. System design questions would be a sort a million numbers. Remember, clarifying the problem, asking what to optimize, discuss trade-offs. And then product and industry ideas. So example, how could one of our products be improved? It's at Microsoft, we want everybody to come in, and we may create great products, but we also know that there's a lot of errors in some of our products, and there's a lot of opportunity for improvement in our products. And I think we're all okay to say that at a company. Nothing's perfect. Nobody's going to be perfect. There's always going to be a better solution. And so you have to be able to understand that and be able to answer a question like this that may be very open-ended, but be able to think about that and be like, actually, yeah, I could, you know, do something if Visual Studios had this, this would make my life as a developer so much better, right? You have to be able to kind of think through those solutions and problems. And remember, be aware of what the company does, the state of the industry, and don't say their products are perfect. Nobody's perfect. We don't like when people say we're perfect because at Microsoft we know we are not, and we have a lot of opportunity. Cool. So some non-coding questions. Broad problem-solving questions. Find out what the interviewer is after. So one of the biggest things at Microsoft in any interview, whether you're in your 30-minute interview or your technical interview, ask questions. So I could ask you a very broad question or I can ask you a very specific question. But I know for a fact you can come up with some question in your mind to get even deeper into what solution the interviewer is looking for. Now, one of the best interviews that I've heard from one of our principal developers that he came back from was talking with the candidate. They didn't even go to the board and start writing code because what they were able to do is he would ask the question and the candidate came back and was like, well, I mean, I could do this solution, and basically stated the perfect solution, or the in the interviewer's mind, the perfect solution. He was like, but On the flip side, I think if I did this and he like went through this full scenario that was completely outside of what the interviewer, to an extent where the interviewer was like, oh my gosh, like I've never heard of this solution before. This is amazing. And he never once went up and wrote code on the board, but through just that interaction and asking questions back and having that dialogue with the interviewer, that guy came into the company and is doing very, very well. He started last year. But those are just some examples of how, you know, you could, any interview question or interview can kind of take a dramatic turn and go in a completely different direction than either the interviewer thought it originally would go, or even the interviewee. So just be ready for that. And then be prepared to talk about anything you have listed on your resume. I think we can't stress that enough, and it will continuously come up in whatever we talk about in any situation. Is like, the resume is so huge. So take our word for it. Use the whiteboard. So if you're in a situation where somebody gives you a whiteboard marker and is like, okay, I'm going to ask you some questions, don't be afraid to go up there, write your thoughts, write out code. You know, make sure you're explaining things along the way, but use the whiteboard if you're given one. Ask clarifying questions. There is a big difference between pseudocode and a specific language. I have not been in a room yet where I've heard interviewers talk about being excited that a candidate wrote pseudocode. Just try not to use pseudocode if you can help it. Sometimes it makes sense maybe to kind of help you through your thought process, and that's great. But then eventually work towards actual working code, because that's going to show that you're understanding for computer science knowledge in a specific language. Think out loud. This one can be really awkward sometimes, but when you're up at the whiteboard or you're solving a problem and you go silent, the interviewer has no idea what you're thinking. They have no idea what your thought process is, how you're going to solve the problem. You could be going, let's say, in a really great direction and then all of a sudden go and erase some things on the board, and the interviewer is like, whoa, what happened? And if you're not talking through why you're doing and solving solutions like that, then it's going to be really the interviewer is not going to follow you, and it can actually be a deterrent for why they would, for ultimately not offering you a job, because they don't understand your thought process. Listen carefully to the problem. Consider time, space, and other trade-offs. Test your code. Start simple, then optimize, and then you're not expected to be perfect. Any questions on these? That's a great question, and that probably will happen. So I think that's where a lot of the start simple, then optimize comes from. So be very open and honest with your interviewer. So if you're in an interview room and you get asked a question that you're just like, oh my gosh, I'm drawing a blank, or I'm not really sure how this would work out, start having that conversation. So start by asking questions. Be like, so I'm a little confused. Can you clarify the question, or is there another way that you can state it? I think that's very fair to say. If you're still confused, just say, well, you know, this kind of looks like, maybe if you can relate a little bit of the project to maybe something you've done in the past, be like, this kind of looks like I can start here, and then start having that dialogue with the interviewer. The one thing that I would say don't ever do in an interview would be to say, I don't know, and give up, right? I would never say, like, I don't know, I'm just going to give up, that's the end. Now, it's okay to say, I'm not sure, I've never experienced a problem like this before, can you give me a minute? Or do you mind if we talk through this problem? I think that's okay, but just giving up, I think, is one of the worst things that you can do, because it shows, so if I'm an interviewer and I'm interviewing you, you just give up on a problem, what is that going to show me if maybe at work you come across a really difficult problem that you've never seen before? Are you just going to give up? Probably not. And if you do, then you probably won't have a job for very long. Second in. That's you.
I have a question, but this is not technical. I mean,
it's okay.
So they ask me, hey, how much are you expected to earn, you know, during your how much money are you expecting to earn during the job?
If you wanted to ask that question? So most companies, like most big companies, will not ever ask you how much you want to earn. I'll just throw that out there. They typically will come into any interview knowing what the different levels or what an entry-level position would earn, and they already have that pre-established, right? So at Microsoft, if you're a university student, and I'll just give this example, and we want to hire you, we actually have... we have tiers, right? So based on your experiences and based on the knowledge that you're going to be bringing to us as a company, you're probably not going to be coming in at a level that is, let's say, in a leadership position, because you have to earn that. And you have to show, like, maybe you've had leadership and we want you to come in. But as a university student, most likely you will not be doing that, maybe on very rare occasions. And at that point, you know, you're going to be compensated and your compensation is going to equate to the level that you're coming in at, right? Now, in Mike's presentation, I don't know if you saw it, but compensation is one of those things that's very tricky at organizations. Everybody is going to do it very differently. There's going to be different things that companies are going to highlight as being kind of what they're known for. So at Microsoft, we have unbelievable benefits. I'm not sure if everybody knows what benefits are. I didn't when I was in college because it didn't matter to me. But benefits are basically extra things. So like healthcare. Right? Or if I need to go, so for example, like if I need to go to the doctor, Microsoft pretty much pays for that. It's changed a little bit in the past year, but they have unbelievable healthcare benefits. Now, a company like Google or Facebook, let's say, maybe doesn't have as good of healthcare benefits. So if that's important to you, that's kind of added into that compensation packet, right? If money is the sole reason why you're going to work for a corporation, which some people it is, you know, maybe you're going to look at that salary, and that's going to be really important to you. And a salary is basically your yearly income. So there's going to be various things that you need to look at whenever you get that final offer package that are going to impact. And definitely talk to your recruiter or whoever is rolling out that offer, because they're going to be able to go very in-depth with the specifics. But if you ask someone what you're going to be making, most likely, if you're coming out of a university, your answer you're going to get is that we're not going to respond. Basically, I doubt you're going to get a response for how much you're actually going to be making until you actually get that offer at the end, at which point we'll start going over compensation, benefits, things like that.
The one difference would be, let's say 10 years from now, you know, you have 10 years of work experience,
yeah,
and you want to change companies, then they may ask you, what are your salary expectations? What are you expecting to earn if you come work for us? They may ask you that question, but as a university student, it's very rare.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right next. Great question. So we get this a lot, and you get various responses. I can tell you exactly what the interviewer is going to look for, so you don't have to ever worry about this ever again. If you've heard a question before, be honest. Always, always, always be honest about that. Now, I would be careful, though, about saying whether or not you know the exact solution, right? So I think it's fair to say, I've heard this question before. What your interviewer will probably say is, great, solve it. And what they're doing there is they're making sure you know. So if you know, they're making sure that you know the answer. And what I've seen more times than not is people will say, "Yeah, I know this answer," and they'll go to solve it, and it will actually be wrong. So that's an interesting trade-off, right? So you're saying that you actually know this solution, and then it's wrong. So I think the honest answer would be to say, "I've seen this problem before. I think I have a solution." Great. They'll probably say, great, let's go through and let's walk through it. Now, what happens when you go the opposite way and you're dishonest and you act like, oh, whoa, this is a crazy question that you're asking here, which does happen. People get really excited. The interviewers are very smart, and they've interviewed hundreds and hundreds of candidates. So they know, and they can pick up on, let's say you're trying to, it comes down to you're going to be acting. Right? There's no way you can like know a question or think you know a solution to a question and be like, and then just keep going through. Like, they're going to catch on because they're going to know the areas. They're going to have expectations of, like, if you've actually never heard this problem, they probably already know what point in that answer you're going to struggle with. Right? And if you act like you're just like kind of going through and acting like certain parts are hard and certain parts aren't, like, just don't do that to yourself, right? It's going to ultimately end very, very poorly. So just be honest the whole time.
Because they may come back in the room and say, hey, you know, he solved it, but it was a little weird. It, I think he's maybe seen the problem before. Next guy, really grill him on that exact same topic all over again.
Mm-hmm.
You don't want to put yourself in that position. Just be honest.
Yeah, don't try to trick the interviewers. They're not going to try to trick you, so just don't even go there. Yeah, we'll do white shirt. Yeah. Are there internships?
Books.
Literature. Yeah. Okay. Okay, so I'll try to, I feel like I want to be at everybody's level. So I'll try to start with your first one. Literature and books. I think the best place to look for those types of things are going to be online, right? So just researching. A lot of the Microsoft blogs that executives or other people put out there, they're going to list different books that they think are interesting. And I think that's a really great place to start. You know, most of the information in terms of algorithms and coding, again, I don't necessarily have that background, but based on what I've seen in the past, you want to almost go back to like your first initial data structures and algorithms classes. Things like that that are going to help you like make sure you know those fundamentals, because that's, I think, one of the more important things when you're going through an interview is making sure that you know your basics. If you don't have a strong foundation and you don't have a foundation, your house is going to break, right? Something is going to fall, right? And so you want to make sure that you have that as a solid foundation to start and build on any question that you're asked from now until like 20-30 years. And so I would say that going back, as opposed to going online, I think that, going back to those original classes that you've taken in university are really, really important. Yeah.
Hey guys, we've got like 5 minutes left.
Oh, so we have 5 minutes. Sure, and we'll kind of, I mean, lunch is after this, so we'll kind of wait around if you want to come up and ask questions, but we'll start here and maybe do like 2 or 3 more. Okay.
When this interview is succeeded, does Microsoft help with housing?
Cool. So your first question about kind of struggling in the interview, and then can you kind of build yourself up, or can you kind of go back later and reapply? So if you, let's say, don't get the job offer in the first round that you apply, that's okay. Not everybody's perfect. Again, we hire a lot of people at like second rounds or third rounds after they've applied, because they've taken the knowledge that they got from the first interview and used it to get better. So I would say that wait about 6 months, but even in your interviews, so that final round of interviews, you're dealing with 3 to 4 1-hour-long interviews. Let's say the first interview you do terrible. We will still hire you if you pick it up during your next interviews, right? So we'll still look at you as a potential candidate. Not one interview will determine the fate, unless something goes extremely wrong, like you're lying all over the place and you're getting caught. That's an integrity issue. That's something a little bit more than any kind of coding testing could ever solve, right? Like, you just don't want to lie. So that's hopefully will answer your question. You can always recover. So don't ever think like if one interview goes bad, you're done for. Like, just keep trying and keep going after it. In terms of housing, I'll touch briefly on it, but the short answer is yes. Microsoft absolutely helps with relocation, visas, housing. We take care of our employers probably better than, I would say, we're one of the best companies in terms of taking care of our employees. We want to make sure that when you're coming here, you're comfortable, and we'll set you up for success. So yeah. We'll start with you, and then we'll end here, and then anybody else that has questions, just come up and talk to us. I think it's going to depend per, like, for what recruiter, which is kind of hard. There's no systematic answer for that. But I would definitely say that for me, I like to see variety. But if you worked on a really hard project at school and you're really proud of it and you know that project because you spent a lot of time, don't be afraid to put that. I don't want to, like, scare people off from not putting projects on their resume because you have to condense it down if that's a product that or a project that you really, really are passionate about. So don't be afraid to do that. And then, honestly, it will kind of just just a pen, but write what you think is going to, you can talk about the most, and that's going to be the most important. Okay, we'll end here, and then. Yep. So the question was basically, do we provide an interview feedback system after you go through our interviews? Right? Okay, cool. Yes and no. So that is going to depend on the recruiters, but based on some laws in the U.S., we typically won't give a full feedback. And the reason why we do that is we'll give you generals. So those competencies that I listed at the beginning, those are kind of that's the type of feedback that you'll receive. So if it's, hey, I hate saying this, but I really couldn't understand you. So you really need to refine a little bit more on your communication skills because I wasn't able to really determine if you were going to be a good fit because I just couldn't understand your answers. We can provide feedback like that, but we're not going to go as in-depth in terms of every single question. But I think it's always fair to ask that question to a recruiter. So if you go through your interviews, some recruiters I think will be more willing to provide that feedback than others, but I think that's a question that anybody is like, it's fair game to ask at any point. Yeah. All right, do you want to come up afterwards? Do you want to just come up? Sorry, because I think like we're at time and I want to make sure we're respectful of everyone's time that's kind of in the room. So if you have any additional questions, why don't you just come up and talk to Mike and I, and then... Sorry? Yeah, come on up.
Cool. Thanks everyone for coming. Enjoy lunch.